There are always those things that never seem to work properly. The clocks in your car that can never be set. The cell phones with buttons so small that you end up pressing all of them at once. These problems and the countless number of others are not only irritating, but at times they make us feel like we're not even smart enough to work with these technological devices. On the fourth installment of the Psychology Podcast, sponsored by the Department of Psychology at Texas Tech University, we would like to discuss the relationship between technology and people, and how it's not necessarily your fault that you can't get your all-in-one remote to work properly. Right now, we're fortunate enough to have three experts on the phone to talk with us about how people interact with technology. Dr. Deborah Bain Davis, Dr. Wendy Rogers, and Dr. Don Norman. I'd like to begin with Dr. Bain Davis, who is a past president of the Human Factors and Ergonomics Society and the past president of Division 21 of the American Psychological Association. She's also the chairperson of the Department of Psychology at George Mason University. Now, Dr. Bain Davis, why do people in general have so many difficulties interacting with technology?
The designers don't take into account all the variations in people's abilities. So they don't look at aging people, they don't look at young people, they don't look at people who are disabled in some way. So designers don't always take into account all of the range of users that need to be accounted for. And they develop one-size-fits-all training. They put a manual out that people probably aren't going to read. And the interface is not designed so that people can walk up and use it. So they go up to a door that has a handle, and they think they should pull on the handle. But in fact, you're supposed to push. And what do they think? They get embarrassed. They turn red. They think they're stupid. They kind of nervously laugh if people are around. And then they go around thinking it was their mistake. When in fact, if you have a handle, you ought to be able to pull on the handle. And if there's a plate, it ought to be a push.
I definitely think that we can all relate to that situation. It seems that many products aren't designed well for people in general, and as you said, our aging population. It seems like they have increased troubles using a computer, making a call on a cell phone, or even using a device that has been given to them for medical reasons. Let me turn to Dr. Wendy Rogers, faculty member at Georgia Institute of Technology. Dr. Rogers is also a past president of the Human Factors and Ergonomics Society and incoming editor of the Journal of Experimental Psychology, Applied. Dr. Rogers, why do problems with technology occur more often than with the younger population?
One difference is that sometimes older adults are less aware of the functionality available to them, so they don't know what the technology might do for them. The factors that we've identified, one of the primary ones is their experience. And given that older adults use fewer technologies generally, that lack of experience may be causing the difficulties they have with new technologies.
In addition to the lack of experience, do you think any of the problems can be attributed to age?
There are age-related differences in cognitive capabilities or perceptual capabilities. And so it's important to design technology with these limitations in mind. So older adults, for example, have much more difficulty discriminating greens from blues or from reading text in low contrast situations or reading smaller text. These perceptual kinds of changes we can accommodate with better design. In addition, older adults have changes in working memory, so their ability to keep multiple items in mind while processing that information. And so if we can provide support that minimizes working memory demands, that will also improve their likelihood to use the technology. So it's not specific just to this age cohort that doesn't have technology experience. Those kinds of age-related changes are going to occur for us even when we get older.
Now let's say our parents or grandparents were interested in using a particular form of technology. How would you suggest helping them out with that?
I think one of the keys is to model for them. So rather than have them try to use it, to demonstrate what can be done using the technology and how it might be useful. And then ease them into using it themselves with a lot of guidance. So you're building their self-confidence in using the technology. So even something that a younger adult might think is trivial, like using a mouse, an older adult who doesn't have experience with that will need training with that.
Thanks, Dr. Rogers. Let me turn now to Dr. Norman, professor at Northwestern University, where he's setting up a program in design. Dr. Norman is also the co-founder and principal of the Nielsen Norman Group, a usability consulting company. and the author of The Design of Everyday Things, Emotional Design, and the Design of Future Things. So, Dr. Norman, let's take a glance into the future. What types of problems with technology do you think we'll encounter within the next 10 years?
What I'm very much concerned about is the future things that are intelligent, automatic, that take control away from us. And I'm especially concerned about how this enters the home and the automobile. It's already entered the automobile. What we have now are intelligent automobiles that steer for us, brake for us, park for us, make decisions. Not necessarily always good ones or safe ones or ones that might actually fight with us. We're driving rapidly to an intersection, and then there's another car coming along the intersection. Well, suppose my car sees that and computes that the safest way of avoiding accident is to accelerate. But I, as a driver, instinctively brake. The result is that we're fighting. Or suppose I stray out of my lane and my car pushes me back into my own lane. Well, how can the car distinguish between my accidental straying out of my lane and my deliberate turning into the next lane? It can't. In fact, the way it is being done today is, well, the good old turn signal. Once the turn signal was used to tell other drivers, other cars, that you intended to turn right or left. Today, the turn signal is how you tell your own car, hey, I really need it. I want to go into the right lane. Let me. Kitchens are filled with automated stuff, with powerful machines. Can you imagine your refrigerator that talks to your scale and says, you're on a diet. You can't eat anything right now. It's this kind of intelligence, what I'm calling disconnected intelligence, an intelligence that really is not in the machine, but it's in the head of the designer who really doesn't know what's going on at the moment. This is the kind of fear that I have about the direction technology is moving us.
I'm sure this is a topic most of us can relate to. I mean, we see the incorporation of automation on a regular basis these days. On the positive side of things, what would help the development of technology?
The only thing I'd like to do is to try to make faster the period between a technology that changes our lives and enhances us and the arbitrary frustrations disappear.
That definitely seems like a step in the right direction. Thank you, Dr. Norman, and thank you, Dr. Bame Davis and Dr. Rogers, for taking the time for us. I'd like to reassure all of you who get frustrated with technology that it's not always your fault. It can be that the product just wasn't designed properly in the first place. As for now, we're out of time. Thanks again for listening. To learn more about the Texas Tech Psychology Podcast, please visit www.psychology.ttu.edu. This podcast was produced by Dr. Frank Durso, edited by Paul Derby, and relayed by myself, R.B. Watts. Stay healthy and active, and have a great day.